Shalom, everyone. Welcome to Chodesh Tov. Chodesh Tov is a monthly 10-minute podcast that is a joint venture of the Schechter Rabbinical School in Yerushalayim, the Ziegler Rabbinical School in Los Angeles, Jewish Theological Seminary in New York, the Conservative Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, and the International Rabbinical Assembly. The purpose of these podcasts is to regularly inform rabbis of the current thinking in a wide variety of fields of Jewish study. Today, our guest is Rabbi Richie Shmuel Lewis, as you all know, the Rosh Yeshiva of the Conservative Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. This is your host, Elliot Schoenberg, International Director of Placement for the Rabbinical Assembly. It's my pleasure to welcome Richie here to discuss a little bit about his work in Machshevet Chazal.
Hi, Robert Schoenberg. It's nice to be here. Machshevet Chazal is a relatively new name of a field that's relatively new. If we wanted to identify the beginnings of it, I guess we'd probably go back to Yitzhak Julius Gutmann, a fellow who wrote in German, and he saw rabbinic literature as philosophical. And he thought he could turn it into something systematic and philosophical, and which nowadays is considered imposing something on that literature that wasn't really native to it. Another step along the way is our own Rabbi Max Kadushin from JTS, who saw more, it seems from today's perspective, saw more clearly the nature of rabbinic thought. But his work is quite general. He doesn't have any long inquiries into anything particular. And the most recent figure, a dominating figure, is Professor Ephraim Orbach from Hebrew University, who did a huge historical work and tried to see the similarities between sources in Chazal and Greek and other contemporary sources, and try to sort of imagine them in dialogue with each other.
There was one particular book that a colleague should look at, or article, where would you send them?
It's a big book, but I think Orbach's, in Hebrew it's called Chazal, I guess. The Sages, yeah. So it's been translated, and that's the foundational book for the field today, even though it's dated. People who are writing today definitely have a slightly different approach.
So let's move to the present day and talk a little bit about the developments post-Orbach, what's happening now, and who are people reading and studying?
Well, the academic world in general has opened up in lots of ways in the last generation. So there's all kinds of special angles nowadays. There's, you know, there's feminism, and there's deconstructionism, and there's all these things, and there's lots of people who are reading Chazal in light of various ideologies. Some of that is very interesting work. Some of it, in my mind, is overly ideologized and less interesting. But they're all beholden in some way to Orbach for the historical sense of history and historical contextualization that was missing in both Kadushin and Gutmann. In that sense, he's still the father of the field. But whereas earlier people thought that they could easily identify statements in rabbinic literature with seemingly similar statements in Greek philosophy or Greek literature, nowadays there's a lot of questioning of that. And the people in the field today are imagining that the genre of rabbinic literature, that is midrash and narrative, leads to different kinds of insights and different kinds of thinking than philosophical thought leads to, and so it's not so simple to just make these parallels and imagine that a one-liner in Chazal that sounds like a one-liner in Plato or in some Stoic philosopher really says the same thing. One of the people doing the best work today is Ishai Rosenzvi of Tel Aviv University. He's written two books now. The first exists only in Hebrew, about the Sota, but it's a groundbreaking book, and just came out this year, a book in English for, I think, UPenn Press, about the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara I'm talking about in rabbinic literature. When I say rabbinic, I mean the period of the Talmud. And I haven't read the book yet. It's brand new, but he sent me a number of chapters before it was published. And
His name again is?
Ishai Rosenzvi. Yishai Rosenzweig of Tel Aviv University. I don't know the name of the book, but I'm sure it's UPenn Press, and it just came out this year. And I'm sure it's an excellent book from the parts that I saw before it was published. And it would be an eye-opener to see what kind of things we might be able to say or think about the Yetzer Hara, something we pass off as if we know what we mean by it. He has a kind of philosophical, historical take on the way that idea developed and what it meant to the rabbis. That, I think, is one of the things that different in general in the contemporary scholarship is that the older generations, whether it's Orbach or Kedushin, when they mentioned anything like the Yetzer Hara, it was assumed that we all know what we're talking about, right? So that they didn't focus any single lengthy inquiry into a term like that. It was just assumed as a sort of colloquial thing. We know what we're talking about. And that's one of the things that more contemporary people are saying, well, maybe we don't know what we're talking about, and let's look at it, let's apply sort of a modern scholarship, both the philosophical and philological, and see what we can unearth when we look at these things.
Great. So let's move a little bit now to what you're working on, and you've been thinking about, and so put yourself into context with these folks, and what are you currently working on?
Okay, thanks. I have a book that I'm just doing the final reading of the galleys for as we talk on humility in rabbinic literature. Hopefully in a couple of months it'll come out with Magnus Press from Hebrew University. It's in Hebrew. And my interest, there's all these midrashim and stories about anava or humble characters in rabbinic literature, and I was always attracted to them without sort of having explained to myself why. And I thought I wanted to look into those sources. And when I first decided to take on this project, so one friend of mine, a professor at Hebrew U, said, Richie, that's an impossible project. You can't possibly do such a thing. And the reason he said is because, say, the term in one form or another will appear so many times. And the idea behind it will appear in so many other sources where the term isn't mentioned. How could you possibly approach such a project? And I hope I found an elegant way to sidestep that problem, which is that if you look at the few hundred times that the term is mentioned in rabbinic literature, you discover that most of those sources don't really help you understand what anava, humility, is. They just use the term. If you find a source that says in order to be appointed a judge, you have to be, you know, courageous, wise, and humble, so that source doesn't really tell you anything about what humility is, except that it can coexist with wisdom and courage. And it's actually quite a very small number of sources, the point of which is to say something about anava, about humility. And so I focused on those sources, and I collected all the sources, and I found which ones, the point of which is to deepen our understanding or to say something concrete and specific about anava itself. And I decided that there are two main issues that are dealt with in those sources. One is what I call the humble personality, and the paradigmatic example of that is God's self, which of course is a striking thing, that there's a chapter in my book about it, what it means to the rabbis that God is the paradigm of humility, why God and why not some other human figure, and how that sheds light on why all the other people called humble are humble. And the other is that, of course, the famous stories of Hillel is that the opposite of humility is kaptanut. Let's call it irascibility or petulance. And the question is, why is that? What is the, you know, why are they a sort of opposite, opposing pair? And how did that come to be? And then I want to make the claim that those two sugyot, as I call them, about God's humility and humility as the opposite of petulance, really have their deepest grounding in the same thought. And that thought, if I had to say it in, you know, a couple of lines, I would say that we all live in a world which is shaped by a social hierarchy, and there's no way around that. And we all inevitably tend to be attracted to the feelings, even in our democratic world, but all the more so in the rabbi's ancient world, that the hierarchy status has something to do with value, with worth. And that God doesn't live in a world like that. And that's one of the things about God being the paradigm humble. In the world that God lives in, hierarchy doesn't... status in a social hierarchy has no indication whatsoever of any kind of worth or value of the person. And avoiding petulance is a way of living out that that realization. So we might say that the humble person lives in a world, the world that God lives in, or the world as seen through God's eyes, where social hierarchy is morally or value-wise a meaningless thing. It's only something that you need because humanity gets involved together in complex projects that require different skills and different levels of responsibility. You have to have a chain of command. But all of those things are really value-wise of no meaning.
So what makes this Machshevet Chazal as opposed to the study of rabbinic literature?
What makes it Machshevet Chazal is the frame that it's put in. And the frame that it's put in is that in order to understand any term or concept or value, like anava, midah we call it, right? You have to understand two things. You have to understand the picture of the world that lies behind it, and the way that that picture of the world impacts on social understandings, and how and whether that impact is critical, that is, it wants to change something in the social understandings, or whether it's supportive. So in my work, for instance, there's a lot of discussion comparing the Greek cosmos with the Hebrew creation. In other words, that there are two different pictures of the world, and to try to show how those different pictures give rise to different understandings of what social hierarchy is about and the values of social hierarchy. So there's a lot of abstract, general discussion about both the relation between pictures of the world and ways of life in general, and these two particular pictures of the world, the Greek cosmos and the biblical Bria, and try to show how those are framing ideas or framing narratives for a whole take of social meanings, of which anava is one of the primary, but not the only, certainly, in rabbinic literature.
So if we were to sum all of this up, what would be the take-home message? If someone wanted to be introduced to this field, what would you say to them?
I would say that if someone wanted to do a little bit of research for themselves, I would say they should find an article or two about biblical anava, written by non-Jews, that would be, because there's been interesting work done on that as anava, as a social quality, as a social midah. And then the field is wide open. My work is the first book-length attempt to say something about anava in rabbinic literature. So I'm not sure what I could recommend besides that. I'm a big fan. I make a lot of use of the work of Itamar Grunwald from Tel Aviv University. He has a book that exists in English also about myth and ritual, and I think there's a lot of interesting insight there into the way that myth works in all religion, and Judaism too, of course. Things in English besides that that are particularly relevant here are more general philosophical things that you may or may not be able to see the connection to. I rely a lot on Charles Taylor. He's one of my favorite contemporary philosophers. So there isn't an existing literature.
So good. So we're breaking new ground here.
Hopefully we're breaking new ground.
That is terrific. Yeah. So I would like to thank Rosh Yeshiva of the Conservative Yeshiva, Rabbi Richie Shmuley Lewis, for being with us today to introduce to us the groundbreaking work on Machshevet Chazal. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Rabbi Schoenberg.
This is Elliot Schoenberg, International Director of Placement for the Rabbinical Assembly, wishing you all a Chodesh Tov.